driver, start your engines!
The Lapped Traffic Podcast has brought you over 300 shows, driver and media interviews, awesome stories and entertainment, and one of the coolest fantasy leagues around. Get ready for another exciting season. Sit back, relax, and try not to get lapped. Now, here's your host, the Professor, Brendan Crump!
Oh, what is up, Lapped Traffic Nation? Welcome to episode 330 of the Lapped Traffic Podcast. Yes, I am your host, the Professor Brandon Crowd, and a rare Wednesday drop of a show, but happy to be here nonetheless. How's everyone doing? Hope you had a great weekend. Five races, five different winners. Boom, there it is. Let's see how long we can keep that one going. And, you know, I'm kind of glad that I'm doing this a day late or 2 days late, because sometimes we drop on Mondays, because there was a lot to unpack from this weekend, and I needed to just have a minute before I talked about it. And honestly, this was the show that almost wasn't. I didn't do a show last week, was planning on doing one this week, but I couldn't get anyone lined up for Monday or Tuesday. And I'm like, I'm busy. You know, no big deal. I'll do one next week. And then, boom, I get someone reaches out and they're like, hey, do you want to have Michael McDowell on the show? I can get you Wednesday afternoon. And I'm like, yes, that'll be perfect. And I'm like, well, who else could we maybe line up last minute? So reached out to old friend of the show, Andrew Sherwin, who hasn't been on in a minute. And lo and behold, here we are with probably an hour's worth of content for everybody. So that's what's coming up. What's been going on? Well, the business is going. Clients are booking with Threes of Crowd Catering, which is awesome. That's starting to keep me busy and nervous and frantic and all the things coming with being self-employed. So, you know, it's only going to be a lot more fun down the road that I can't wait to share with you guys. This weekend is also Lindsay's 40th birthday, which is going to be a lot of fun to celebrate. We've got friends, family coming over for what will be our third event in 6 weeks at the house. It all kicked off back Daytona weekend with Alden's second birthday party. Then 2 weeks after that was the big taste testing event. And now this weekend, Lindsay's 40th. So looking forward to that. Glad to be here this afternoon with everyone. And can't wait to get this thing dropped here really right after I hit the stop button. So we're going to be getting this out here to you before you know it. And you know it now because you're listening to it. So, but before we get into it, little shameless plug. This week's show brought to you by, yes, Threes of Crowd Catering. Do you want to impress the next crowd you host? Then let me, the Professor Brandon Crowd of Threes of Crowd Catering, bring his passion from hosting his own friends and family in his kitchen to yours, featuring barbecue, Italian, and American menu options. Summer events and graduation season is right around the corner. Book your next event now by calling or texting 586-668-5835. Visit our website, 3crowdcatering.com. That's the number 3crowdcatering.com. Follow along on social media at 3crowdcatering. Let the crowds cater your next crowd. That just needs to be on the radio, I think. I mean, you know, just have a passion for that, right? Like when I typed that up, it just flowed. But anyways, I digress. Let's get down to business. I hope you enjoyed the last show with Daniel Hemrick and Aaron Studwell. And as I mentioned, coming up tonight and in just a second, Michael McDowell, along with Andrew Sherwin, got some Lap Traffic Fantasy, all that good stuff. So let's get Mr. Michael McDowell back on the line. All right, Lapped Traffic Nation, joining me on the line, making his fifth appearance on the show. He is the driver, the number 34, loves travel stop forward with Front Row, with a pole and two top tens already through the first five races of 2024. Welcome back, Michael McDowell. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm awesome, man. Thanks for coming back. Glad to have you. It seems like we get to catch up at least once a year, which is awesome. So crazy start to 2024. We've had some wild rides. You know, what's the first five races been like for you?
Yeah, it's been fun, actually. We've had a lot of speed in our, you know, Love Travel Stop Ford Mustang, sitting on the Front Row Daytona 500 and then getting a pole at Atlanta. And you know, a few top tens to back that up here early on. So it's been a good start. It's, you know, there's definitely a lot to build on and a lot to be excited about for us, just as much speed as we've shown, but you know, it's getting down to that crunch time where we feel that pressure of we need to get a race win and turn this speed into a win. And so, you know, our cup, championship and our cup season really comes down to that. You have to win a race to make the playoffs. And once you make the playoffs, you gotta win a race to keep going. And so, we have our eyes focused on that goal. And, with COTA coming up this weekend, we'll have a good opportunity to, to fight for it.
Absolutely. Coming off one of your best seasons of your career in 2023, minus the win, from the top five, top 10 perspective, you're almost there in 2024. So that's got to be a really good positive, shot in the arm, if you will, to carry that momentum. Coming off of 2023 into the off season, how did you feel about, yours and the team's performance with the win and getting into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I think that, as a team, we've, made huge gains these last 3 or 4 years and really building a program that allows us to show up at the racetrack, almost week in and week out and have a shot at, making the second round and qualifying and racing inside the top 10. And so it's been fun and, that's confidence inspiring and building. And, now it's turning that top 10 speed into top 5 speed so that we can put ourselves in that position to win more often. But it's been fun. I mean, it's really cool to see, where this team is, started and where it's coming and where it's going. And it's been a cool journey. So we just kind of hammer down right now and trying to make sure that while our cars are fast and we have the opportunity that we go make it happen.
No, that's great. Absolutely. You mentioned the pole at Atlanta. Through as your career's developed, from the fan and the couch racer perspective, your super speedway, finishes speak for themselves. And, you started on the front row at Daytona as well, like you said. So how is New Atlanta for you? Are you a fan of New Atlanta?
I am. I don't think you'll ever replace the old Atlanta, right? And, but what they did at the racetrack and turning it into kind of a hybrid of a super speedway and a mile and a half, I think that the racing has been really fun, intense. And, as we saw, it was a great race, this earlier in the season. And the track is aging a little bit. And with that, the cars are sliding around and are a little harder to drive, but not to the point where it used to be. And so I think it's a kind of a cool combination right now. I'm curious to see where the track goes as it ages, throughout the years. But right now it's a lot of fun. And, obviously it produced a really, great show too. So I think the drivers are starting to buy into, the New Atlanta.
That's awesome. No, so I got to ask you, you mentioned, the track starting to show some wear. You as a driver, can you tell a difference in the tracks that are more recently resurfaced, like Atlanta, versus a track, I'm going to use my home track in Michigan, that was repaved, I want to say 2011, 2012, and yeah, we really still haven't seen that kind of break in yet, if you will. Or is that, do you feel that way as well about some of these tracks that were repaved versus some of the newer ones?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, a couple things that goes into that. It all depends on what they use to repave, the aggregate that they use, how abrasive it is, how smooth it is, how much rubber's in it. And as crazy as this sounds, not every place does it the same, right?
Sure.
And so a lot of it depends on your weather and also too, your not just weather and winters and freeze and all that, but just your soil and your rock and the base and everything else. And so I think every track's fairly unique to that. But I think also too, over these last few repaves, I think, we've learned a few things on how to speed up that process, that aging process that maybe wasn't around when, Michigan was repaved or Kansas was repaved and a few of those other places, like you mentioned in that 2008 to 2012 era. So I think we're doing a better job with all that now and that should help, kind of produce the on-track racing that we want to see without waiting that 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
For that track to really season in. So yeah, definitely.
Awesome. All right, let's talk about Bristol. You know, solid efforts on the 34 for you guys, brought it home 11th. But you know, obviously, you know, you look on social media and all that, you've got the you know, those that loved it, those that hated it, and those in the middle are quiet for some reason. So what you know, what were your thoughts in terms of, you know, how the race went once you guys saw that there were, you know, some form of a tire issue and realized, oh man, we may not have enough in the pits to get us to the, to the end of this thing. So
yeah,
you know,
so
talk about it.
I think that I'm probably that guy quietly in the middle. You know, I thought the race was super challenging and was fun and was new and was different than anything that we've done in a very long time or really ever. And so that part of it was exciting. You know, but it was definitely nerve-wracking and challenging, knowing that you could only go 30 or 35 laps before the tires start blowing out. And so I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was a great race. It was fun. A lot of strategy involved with how hard you push and how hard you don't push and whether you go on the restart or don't go on the restart. And there's so many unique variables that we don't typically have to deal with, that it became, you know, just like anything, a race to see who could do it the best, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, I enjoyed it. Now, if you ask me, do I want to go back to Bristol and do the same exact thing that we did Sunday? Probably not. I would want the tires to wear out and fall off, but probably make it, you know, 50 or 60 laps.
Okay.
And then
yep.
The other side of it too is that without having to baby it so much, because, you know, we would have to run the bottom there. And as soon as we'd run up to the middle to pass one or two cars, and, you know, you would just push hard for a lap or two just to get around a few cars, which was easy to do. You were just taking the chance of wearing your stuff a little faster than the guy next to you. But just moving up that one lane and pushing for one or two laps really hurt the tires.
Sure.
And so I don't think any of us want to have to drive at 60% or 50% the whole race. But if there was a balance between pushing 80 to 100% to manage your tires, you know, I think that that would be fun. But that's not what we had at Bristol.
No. Well, and that's the thing too, right? Yeah. Like every, you know, we all loved that, you know, I'll go back to Atlanta. We loved the old Atlanta because of the tire wear and, you know, it put it in the driver's hands, a little bit more than some other places. And, you know, that's what I think we're clamoring for. I think that's what you guys as drivers are clamoring for as well. And like you said, we kind of got it, but not really. And it's like, for me watching it on TV, and they started talking about, you know, the tire marbles, and then they did an overhead shot, and I'm like, that's not marbles, that's shred. Like, you know, like, so what did you, you know, when after, you know, the first 25 laps and you start to look out the, you know, the windshield and you see what's collecting up there on the banking, you know, were you like, oh man, that don't look right, that ain't right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think we were fortunate that early on in that race, we had a couple cautions that, you know, happened organically. That kind of prevented it from being worse than it really was, because I think those first 25 laps, none of us were conserving like we needed to, because we just didn't know.
Sure.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. But by those first two cautions, we all sort of knew that, okay, this race is going to be a different race than what we anticipated. And so, you know, the marbles were definitely a challenge, because down the straightaways, even, you really had 1.5 lanes. Okay. And if somebody jammed up and you had to go low, you would pick all that up and you would go into the next corner, and it was literally like you were on ice.
Wow. Yeah.
And
oh, man.
You would just take off. And so you had to be really disciplined with where you positioned your car, and you had to be disciplined with what you were doing with your tire. So, like I said, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a cool challenge and really fun. But if you talk about, you know, Atlanta and Kevin Harvick and what he was good at making speed and not wearing out the tires, but he was still pushing 90%, you know? And so I think we just have to get a little bit closer to us all being near our max, you know? But it was cool to see that maybe we could get there. And if we figure out how we did, hopefully we can make some adjustments to to improve it. And who knows too, you know, a little bit of rubber going down, a little bit of temperature change, and maybe we have what we're looking for, you know? So we'll see.
Awesome. I love it, man. Well, listen, yeah. It was great to have you back on. Best of luck this weekend at COTA. Definitely expecting to see the 34 car up at the front. Give a shout out to sponsors and tell everyone where they can keep up with you on social media and all that good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, make sure you guys tune in. It's going to be a great race in Austin on Sunday, and we'll have the Lux Travel Stop Ford Mustang out there. And I'm on all the platforms, all social media. You got a team of social media people, so Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun race. Definitely tune in.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Best of luck, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. Thanks,
man. Thanks, man. We'll see ya. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, there you have Michael McDowell. Great to have him back on the show. And normally this would be the spot where I kind of do a recap, all that good stuff. And I'm just going to jump right into everything with the legendary Andrew Sherwin from the Blowing the Doors podcast. And we're just going to have some fun here for probably about a half hour or so. And we'll cover racing. We're going to cover some football and all of that good stuff. So here is Mr. Andrew Sherwin. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, joining me on the line for his 23rd appearance on the show, formerly of the PETM podcast, currently of the I Think Blowing the Doors Off podcast. We'll get some insight on that. Welcome back to the Lap Traffic podcast, Mr. Andrew Sherwin. What's up, brother?
Hey, man, I appreciate you you having me on.
Absolutely.
Always good to talk NASCAR. Of course, as soon as we relaunched the Blowing the Doors Off, I got like a plate entirely too full. So you text me and said, can you help out today? And I'm like, yeah, I can do yours, but I don't have any time to do mine. So I'm going to be texting Brett after this going, we're not going to do a show this week either. And next week I have a class 3 days in the middle of the week. So
that's not why, well, because it was funny. I was going to invite my, I'm like, oh, they fired theirs up. I'm really busy. I could do theirs. I didn't do one last week, and I hate to miss 2 weeks in a row. And I'm like, well, maybe if I go on theirs, then we can cross promote. You know, I'm like, I was almost going to invite myself onto yours that you're apparently not doing. So I'm glad we were able to make this work very last minute. I literally text Sherwin, you know, 10 minutes ago. I'm like, dude, you got 30 minutes. Let's fire this thing up for a minute.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I've spent all day scrambling, you know, my butt off here at work. And, you know, yep. And it's like, after this is done, I've still got scrambling all the way until I get to dinner, you know.
So heard that.
They don't even have any time to pretend to try to say it.
You guys relaunched after a small hiatus. Checked out the show. It was great to hear you guys back out there. You know, Brent obviously is a little occupied with family, kids. You know, you've got family and the kids, and he's got his other podcast and his hunting stuff that he does. So are you taking over? Are we going to get some solo Sherwin shows from that, or what's the plan?
I don't know if I have the gumption to do that, but what we talked about was he asked me, he said, look, he said, I don't have the time to be the host, the driver of two different shows and do everything that I'm doing at home.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, you know, I could probably do that. I said, but I don't have the time to go. I certainly don't have time to put together a one-man show and then try to go get guests or anything either. So it's really kind of like what you just did to me, but like with Brett, it's like, hey man, do you have time this week? If not, I will look for, you know, friendly, you know, somebody who's already been a friend of the podcast. That's really easy to ask that I can't,
sure,
you know,
sure.
I can put on the spot at the last minute and be like, hey, I've got a show sheet. Would you jump on here and do it with me?
Yep. Yep. I mean, well, hey, we can rotate every couple of weeks or something if you want. Like I have no issue with that. And then that helps us both from a time and ease perspective and getting the voices out there on different platforms. So that's something we can, you know, put a pin in if you'd like for down the road.
Yeah. And I'm really curious to see, you know, I jumped back out of social media for the most part. I'm curious to see how it can do just sort of living in the dark,
Yeah, no, for sure.
Because I, you know, I'm never going to be what I was in Twitter, because I don't even know that that was a great, that was definitely not a great version of me, but I just don't have the time. Yeah. That's what I discovered, is if I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing, I there's little time that I had to mess with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, now I, that took me a long time to understand that, but now I do.
Well, I'm with you. Like, I feel bad. Like, I don't, you know, I'm kind of like you. I don't have the presence on Twitter that I used to have, whether it's tweeting during the races or, you know, just a random, you know, hey, let's strike up a conversation on a Wednesday night thread or something like that. And it's, you know, life, kid, and now throw self-employed into the mix. It even, you know, makes it that much more challenging. And but I don't want to, I definitely came to the conclusion with Lindsay's support, like, work too hard, put too much time and effort into this to just let it slip away. So, you know, we're just going to keep plugging and, you know, putting out content when I can, and hope we still keep some people along for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think at least in my part is I don't think I did a very good job of explaining to the person that's the most important to me in my life what this meant to me.
Sure.
And so,
here we
Sorry,
are.
Somebody's knocking on my door.
No, you're good.
Somebody's knocking on the door, showing me my UPS package I've been waiting on all day. No, it's all good. I'm glad that's here now. That means I can do that, and then I can get gone after we do this. But yeah, no, it just, it, what it is, you know, I went from one person, you know, just managing himself,
sure,
to, you know, I, you know, have a you know, live-in girlfriend, and she has three children. And, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of things you have to set aside. So, I mean, I don't want to, you didn't call me to talk about relationships. You called me to talk about NASCAR.
Well, you know, hey, whenever
every now and then
on,
I do get on my soapbox with y'all on, in the text and just say, this is what I screwed up. So if you can learn from me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, yes, NASCAR. Well, first we'll get to NASCAR, because NASCAR was a, it was a crazy weekend and a lot to get into with that. So before we get into that, real quick, I got to know the Atlanta Falcons signing Kirk Cousins from Minnesota and from Michigan State. So, you know, I've got some ties to Kurt and was wondering, you know, what your thoughts were with that signing.
Well, I think, you know, everybody's going to, the only thing people have to draw from is the past and what the existing numbers are, and say, you know, because Atlanta was really split. It was so weird on Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
But I think the main reason why that was is because the Vic era ended in the worst possible way it could have. Not the worst possible way, but, you know, it left a bad taste in a lot of Falcons fans' mouth.
Sure.
And then so you come right back with the exact opposite thing of what Vic was in Ryan. And, you know, you can talk to your blue in the face about what a good quarterback is and what one isn't. Well, Matt Ryan is going to be right on the edge of making the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah.
So if you're drawing comparisons and saying Kirk Cousins is Matt Ryan 2.0, I'm totally good with this. The money appears to be appropriate. I hope that he learned something from Aaron Rodgers' process of getting healed from that surgery and all the things that you really have to do at that age to get your body in shape, because it's way more. It's, you know, that's a devastating injury. My guess is he'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
So the fact that they didn't sell next year or the year after that's farm to, you know, to get the kid from Chicago who was originally signed to play at Georgia, I'm glad they weren't first to the party and gave up too much, because obviously nobody wanted that guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing with Cousins is I don't know if it was by design, things just happened in the way they did, but where his, like, free agency contracts, this one and his last one, lined up, like, to just give him, like, this most massive payday without really too much of a, you know, playoff winning record, if you will, but you still know, like, he's, you know, he's a damn good quarterback, and it's like, well, We know what we're getting. We know we're getting a drop back passer, someone that's got a little bit more mobility in the pocket than, say, you know, our quarterback, Jared Goff, who's going to get probably just as big of a payday with the Lions here. So, you know, get the right team around him. And, you know, I feel like in Minnesota, he was missing, you know, a couple key players on the bench, mostly on the defensive side of things, because they had a solid running back and passing game with the Vikings. So, you know, hopefully we see the Falcons, you know, back in the mix here in 2024.
Well, I'm very curious to see what, if this is Matt Ryan 2.0, I'm curious to see what Matt Ryan could have done if he had had a running back that could catch passes his whole career.
Sure.
Because he didn't.
Yep.
And that's what Bijan Robinson gives you.
Yes.
So you automatically have another weapon, yep. Right? Now, I'm not sold on the idea of calling the tight end Pitts a bust. That's a supreme athlete that probably hasn't been put in the right place to succeed yet. Because we haven't had a quarterback for 2 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, I mean, I'm actually, you know, I'm closetly very excited about how all this played out. I think they managed it well in terms of what they could get for what they have and not selling any futures.
Fair enough. All right. We've rambled 10 minutes. Let's give them what they're here for, which is some NASCAR talk. So the last great Coliseum, Bristol, this past weekend was definitely, I'm going to start it off by using the adjective interesting. You know, we finally got away from putting dirt down on the Bristol Spring Race, which everybody was excited about. And the truck race, pretty solid in my opinion. And we can get into truck and Xfinity here if you want and if we have time. But let's start with Cup. And talk about Tyre Geddon 2.0 from I'm stealing that from the Indy 2008 race. And what were your thoughts, Sherwin, once you kind of saw how the race was playing out, what was happening on the track, the tire situation? Where are you at coming off of this past weekend and what we saw at Bristol?
Well, I'll say this. It's a wildly different situation than Indy, and it's mostly because of the size of the track and the speeds of travel.
Sure.
Okay. So Indy was very problematic because the tires were actually blowing out, but my guess is they were likely blowing out because there's so much heat, and you run that race in late July or early August, the Brickyard, and it's just, there's a lot. It's pretty intense, you know, and it being flat and, you know, sure, with the oscillation that a stock car has, it's a lot of load to manage on the right side. And NASCAR could not afford to have anybody hit the fence at 100 and, you know, almost 200 miles an hour in a flat corner where you're not even going to slow down when you hit the fence. You're just going to blast it. And so that's a different situation. So there really are probably only a couple of racetracks where they could have got away with this aggressive of an attempt to try something different. But I still think that they're probably, you know, ruminating over which one of these little variables that was in play was the deciding factor. Because we have three things, I think, that we can look at the most. All right. We can look at temperature of the surface of the racetrack. We can look at what the breakup compound they use. So they use something that goes in there. Basically, they poured a solvent into the rubber compound, and it shortens the chains, making it easier for the rubber to come off. Now, why it didn't want to stick to the concrete, I don't know, but I've been in plenty of situations as an engineer where I said, okay, what we're trying to do is figure out why this thing wants to be over there or why it doesn't want to be over there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we've gone through all the reasons why we thought that might be what's taking place. So, you know, between those two things there, and then, you know, they already knew they were going to do something to the tire. The temperature dropped below 65, which seems to be some kind of a magical turning point. I don't think Goodyear's totally got their finger around exactly what they did. Which one of those variables had the most impact, but I'm sure they have a pretty good handle on what they actually did to the rubber, right?
Sure. I mean,
it's supposed to be the same rubber as it was last September, but they just made it on a different production line. But I think we have one set of tires that Logano ran that suggests that those tires that we ran last September would have done the same thing or something pretty similar, would have worn out way too soon, where they didn't do that last September. And also, I bet you if you check the ambient air temperature of a early September night race in Bristol, Tennessee, it's probably still 10 degrees warmer than a day race was this past weekend.
Sure. Yep.
So does 10 degrees matter? Well, absolutely, it matters. Just depends on who's 10 degrees and where you put it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's expound on that for a second here in terms of, you know, tires, in terms of the wear. You know, NASCAR obviously did not have enough sets of tires to continue to feed the teams based on how the race was going, how quickly they were going through them. You know, from a quality of race perspective, as you know, we're hitting a halfway point and we're like, oh shit, this could be problematic towards the end of this thing. You know, did that impact your opinion of the race, the finish of the race, you know, or the, what do you think from the general fan perspective with regards to that?
I think if fans watched it on television and they actually listened to what Clint and Harvick were talking about, they would have a very good feel for why the race turned out the way it did. And I think that would satisfy a lot of their concerns, right? Not everything is doom and gloom,
sure.
But you and I are talking in a very controlled environment. The race has already gone by. We've had a few days to settle out.
Yep.
We're good.
Yep.
But, you know, I mean, in general, we don't typically find ourselves in the pitchfork mob anyway.
No.
Once, you know, it was probably good for me to be away from it for the first stage and then to sort of see some of the texts that you guys were sending and go, wow, I wonder what's going on. And then as I started getting closer and getting the signal, I could get into NASCAR.com and sort of read, you know, what caused the cautions. I'm like, oh boy, we got a tire deal here.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's funny you say, you know, like letting it, you know, ease for a couple of days. Cause I was mad. Well, not mad, but I was disappointed during the race and how it was playing out. And I mean, I, you know, just like you, I love tire wear. I, you know, and I think most of the drivers want tire wear and, you know, to put the race into the hands of the driver, if you will, in terms of, hey, you know, where's your skill at in terms of managing, you know, cause anybody can go full throttle, wear them out in five laps, but you know, I'm thinking back to old Atlanta here in terms of, you know, the Kevin Harvicks of the day and being able to manage those tires to still have something left in them for a second half of a long run. And, you know, that's what I want. I think a lot of the fans want that. The drivers want that. But that wasn't your quote unquote typical tire wear and, you know, conserve situation there. And that's what bothered me a little bit, because I felt that was taken away from the old Bristol, quote unquote, that we want to see, and it was putting it in a bad light. Here we are coming off, you know, some bad experiences, if you will, with the Bristol dirt track, fans wanting to go back to normal. They went to normal, and now here, you know, we've got a tire situation that could potentially be overshadowing, you know, a good race and getting people back to the races.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, as it were, and this is every sport's going to fall victim to this, not all fan bases are comprised of people that have a really pretty good understanding of the way you have to go about doing research and design experiments and have those experiments lead to results that produce predictable results in the future. It's almost impossible to do that in NASCAR.
Sure.
You know, that's kind of what spring training games are for baseball. And then, you know, the preseason for football, they're trying to find a couple of players to see, can this guy block in the open field, or can this guy cover? Does he know how to switch from zone safety coverage to man-to-man safety, bringing up in the slot, those kinds of things. Do they recognize the things that are happening around them? In NASCAR, the only way to know whether the tire has, you know, whether some change that you made has mattered is to go out and run a full schedule worth of races.
Right. Yeah.
And then, or just run. I mean, you really would have to spend some astronomical amount of money, because you can't have anything less than about 20 cars on the track or you're not going to get the result.
Absolutely.
You need. You really probably just need to go ahead and stick all 36 chartered cars on the racetrack for the test. Say, we're going to run a half a race, or we're going to run this. We're going to do this. We're going to do some very scheduled interval racing to try to see what happens with these tires.
Yep. And with the lack of problem testing and all of that kind of stuff, you know,
you still have no ability to control the ambient air temperature.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I think that's why we don't see those kinds of tests in NASCAR, because they're like, yeah, but even if we did this once, what does the data mean?
You're right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of money for, you know, stuff written on paper that you can't do a lot with, you know. Also throw in a mix, Aaron Studwell and I talked about this on the last show, was that, you know, a few seasons ago, you know, the first 5 to 10 races, you hit some similar type tracks. You know, the last couple years now with the NASCAR schedule changes, you know, we almost go to every single style of racetrack once before we even start to loop back around to maybe go into a second intermediate track or a second, you know, speedway type track. You know, we are 5 races in. You know, we've got our short track. You've got Phoenix, which is its own beast. We went to Las Vegas, our mile and a half. Atlanta is its own new beast. And we've done Daytona. Now we're going to a road course. You know, then it's Richmond, Martinsville. You know, Texas is where, before we really get back to a intermediate style track, which is almost a month and a half after we went to the first one. So
that, right.
that I think plays a role too in it, in terms of, you know, the team's notebooks and when they can start to really go back and reference.
It's hard. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, I wish the people that get so upset by things like this would listen to the people that they respect in the sport. Sure. Like, find somebody whose voice you respect. It doesn't have to be Denny Hamlin. It doesn't have to be Kevin Harvick. It doesn't have to be Dale Earnhardt Jr. I would pick one of those guys, though, and say, I'm going to trust one of these guys to tell me what's going on. And when they start saying things like, these are the things you should be thinking about when you see a race like this. Like, did we talk about the next gen car this weekend? No, we didn't. Did we talk about aero and getting, you know, aero tight behind somebody at Bristol? No, we didn't. Why? Because the tires prevented any of those type of discussions.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So it gets us back to, what is the most important thing that happens in a race? Tires touching the ground. Yeah. That is the most important variable of the race.
Yeah. Nope. I it's hard to disagree with that. Absolutely.
And if you want Goodyear to be open to the idea of failing, so to speak, on Sunday to then sell tires to the public on a passenger vehicle on Monday, you have to trust them that they're going to push the limits. And they did, and they showed us. And instead of saying, oh, you guys are idiots, go, no, they're not idiots. They're not at all. Mm-hmm. They knew, they had a good idea what was going to happen. It just was a little bit worse than what they expected.
Sure. Yep. Yep. And, you know, think about what a tenth of a, you know, mile per hour does, you know, a little bit worse than tire wear can cause, you know, a little bit of a fiasco sometimes. So, all right, let's talk a little bit. You know, we've got a sample size so far in the regular season here, 5 races in. As I mentioned, we've hit a good variety of our tracks. I know that it's too early to say, hey, this is how our standings are going to shape out. But, you know, who's impressed and who's, you know, being a dud, or who's a lap down, if we want to go back to the old school lap traffic segment? Who's your lucky dog? Who's your lap down 5 races in?
That's a great question. Lucky dog? Five races in? Lucky dog. I think 2 weeks ago I might would have had one. I would say John Hunter is acquitting himself quite well so far.
Sure, sure.
Whether it's luck or not is up for debate. And I know that's not the true meaning of the lucky dog, but
yeah.
I would say if we just talk about in terms of who are you surprised by so far?
Yeah.
I would say John Hunter Nemechek.
Sure. Sure. I like John Hunter. I have to give, and I know a lot of people are not a fan, but you got to give some props to Ty Gibbs. Look at what he did in a very difficult race this past weekend. Went out there and, you know, I think he either won one, maybe both stages, was out front for a good chunk of that race and, you know, kept it clean and, you know, conserved the tires. So, I mean, for, you know, someone as fresh as he is to go out there and run the type of race that he did this past weekend at Bristol, he's sitting third in points right now. Ty Gibbs has impressed me a lot these first five races in 2024.
Agreed.
All right. Lap down, if you will, for me. I'm going to go with Logano, who's sitting deep back in 26th right now. But, you know, I'm pretty sure Joey Logano is going to move up those standings and probably have a win or two by the time, we're 26 races deep into this. So I'm not too concerned, but it is surprising to see Logano that deep in the pack five races in.
I would imagine he would probably agree with that sentiment. He probably hasn't been this low in points after five races since he drove the number 20 Home Depot car.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. And I'll have to give an extra prop to Daniel Suarez, because we were talking at the start of the season, you know, what's the future hold for him? And, you know, that day he goes out and picks up a win. So odds are he's got himself at least a playoff spot, based on the way things typically play out here. So, you know, that was probably a much needed shot in the arm for the 99 team.
Yeah, agreed. And also, what do we have after five races? We have five unique winners.
That's true. Oh, yes. I love how long that stretch can go on, and talking about that. Like, yes, that is... that's music to my ears right there, man. Yes, let's keep that trend going for sure. And it's a good possibility this week with going to COTA, you know, first road course. Kyle Larson obviously could put the end to the, unique winners. But, there's some solid guys out there that go pick up a win and make it six.
Agreed. I mean, and you have... there's previous winners, that are out there at COTA that haven't won yet too. So, I mean,
yes.
You got Reddick, you got Chastain. I think I would chalk me up as surprised that Chase hasn't won one of these as a cup race yet. But, I'm curious to see. I'd be really curious to see where Toyota is after a road course.
Yeah, no, I hear
because they seem to be pretty, they're pretty dialed in on a lot of things right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nope. They got it in. And, speaking of Ty Gibbs, you tell me Ty Gibbs wins this weekend, I'm not going to be surprised by that. So
not in the least. No, I wouldn't be surprised if Ty Gibbs won. That's actually, I don't know that anybody else, unless something really weird happens, is there anybody out there that's like clearly very good at racing road courses, but just for whatever reason, hadn't been in the right car, hadn't had a good run, bad luck. I don't know.
Well,
I don't think there's anybody out there like that.
Well, I am very curious to see what Josh Berry is able to do this weekend at at COTA. You know, pretty solid short track and road course racer from the Xfinity Series. You know, that team is enough. That's a team that could use a good shot. SHR needs some positive momentum to go their way. You know, Chase Briscoe could also, you know, have a pretty solid run this weekend. Like you mentioned, seeing where the Toyotas are after this weekend, I would really like to see a solid day, maybe two top 10 cars out of SHR. I think they have the potential from a driver, you know, talent level to go out there and do it, you know, and hopefully they can continue to start to get some better cars at the racetracks.
Agreed.
Let's see here, sir. Well, I said 30. We're at 30 here. You want to wrap? Do you got a few more minutes? What do you got?
Yeah, actually, I do have to go.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
No worries, man. Well, listen, tell everyone where they can go catch the latest Blowing the Doors Off podcast that dropped and what the social handle is and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, we don't have a social handle anymore.
Okay.
So that's all done with, but it's in iTunes and it's on Spotify. So we actually use the podcast producer's version of Spotify to do it. So it's all housed in there. It used to be called Anchor,
and Spotify bought it. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it's there, Blowing the Doors Off. We did one last week. For my first time trying to host it, I was lost. I was waiting for him to talk, and I was like, oh, I'm supposed to be telling you when to talk.
I'm supposed to throw the softballs to you.
Yeah, it was weird.
I love it. Awesome. Well, listen, man, thanks for hopping on, and I'm sure it's not the last time this season, and we'll catch you very soon, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, let's keep Austin weird this weekend.
Yes, I love it. All right, man, we'll see you.
All right, buddy, bud.
All right, there was Mr. Andrew Sherwin. Great time there. And all right, it's a little later in the show for it, but you know, let's do some lap traffic social media real quick before we close this thing out with some lap traffic fantasy. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Follow along on TikTok, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, all of that good stuff, all at laptrafficpc. If you've made it this far into the show, leave a review, tell your friends, all of that good stuff. You can listen on any platform. And don't forget, I've got stickers and koozies to give away for free. All you gotta do is reach out to me. Shoot me a DM, at me on Twitter, shoot me an email, fill out the contact page on the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Happy to send those out to you. And we've still got giveaways going on. It's a little slow go there, but we've got the Mark Martin framed autographed plaque from his number 8 days when we hit 8,000 followers for season 8 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. That all wrote itself pretty well. And then we've got the Lap Traffic prize pack and Kevin Harvick 124 diecast to give away once at 3 Crowd Catering and at Dining DET Pod hit 500 followers. So we'll, it's been a minute since I've retweeted those out. Maybe we'll get that out here later this week to kind of see if we can't drive a little more activity for those two fun giveaways. And all right, I think it is time to close this thing out with some lap traffic fantasy. All right, just a reminder, get your picks in by 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Thursday, which is tomorrow, by the way. Keep the Twitter interaction up using hashtag LTFantasy. And I goofed on the Monday email. I forgot to put the Xfinity series, but I did send out a recap and a follow-up. All three series are racing this weekend, so make sure you get your picks in for all three. A little recap from this past week at Bristol. David James, with 107 points, scored week high. A few of you picked both Denny Hamlin and Christian Eckes, but that was only good for 101, but you picked up a couple bonus points along the way, along with David James, who had Brad Kay and Eckes. My picks of Buescher and Crafton, mid-30s each, slowly starting to make my way out of the basement, so to speak. But let's recap. your top 10, shall we? In first place, segment one, 534 points is David Mullins. In second with 527 is Joe Trelone. In third with 499 is Jeremy Waterbury. In fourth with 492 is Mark Ludington. In fifth with 490 is Matt Dombrowski. In sixth with 486 is David James. In seventh with 481, Dalton Brooks. In eighth with 470 is Robert Riggs. We got a two-way tie for ninth with 469 with Kent Dolphy and Scott Wagner. And wrapping out the top 10 with 468 is Matt Camper. I love it. That's some close scores. 492, 490, 486, 481. I love it. And then the bonus points. There's four of you guys with four bonus points. Dalton Brooks, David James, David Mullins, Robert Riggs, the Dr. Aaron Studwell, Andrew Yu, Charles Leporel, Eric Gold, Joe Trelone, Kevin Hahn, and Michael Palmer all have three. A lot of you guys have two bonus points. A lot of you have one. And then there are a few of you, just a few of you, that are like me with no bonus points. But maybe, just maybe, we can make that change this weekend as we are headed to Texas and COTA for our first road course race of the 2024 season. Tyler Riddick picked up the win last year, and whom I am guessing will be a very popular pick this week with Lap Traffic Fantasy. Kyle Busch, who's off to a bit of a rough start, finished second last year. I'm sure he'll be another pretty popular pick, trying to pick up another trophy this weekend, as he is very strong at the road courses, as we all know. So is Martin Truex Jr., who's looking for his first win of the year. Chase Elliott looking for his first win. Will we get our sixth different winner through six races? We'll find out this weekend. But first, it's time for my picks, all three series, kicking it off with the truck series. I am going to go with the 9 of Grant Enfinger, old reliable and Mr. Grant Enfinger, for the Xfinity Series race. I mean, this guy just gets it done at the road courses. He may not win, but odds are he's going to pick up a lot of points, and that is the 7 of Justin Allgaier. And then on the Cup side of things on Sunday afternoon, I am rolling with the 19 of Martin Truex Jr. So there you have it. There's my picks. Don't forget to get your picks in. And that is going to be a wrap for episode 330 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com, Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast, TikTok, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, all at Lap Traffic PC. Huge thank you to Michael McDowell and Andrew Sherwin for calling in. We'll see what we can get lined up over the next week or two. Don't get caught chasing the lucky dog. Tune in each and every week to the Lap Traffic Podcast. See ya.